The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Hello and welcome everybody to... Wait a second. That's not how I start the show. I was thinking about the... Box Breakers.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Look at that. I
thought you were going to say after. Actually, I think that's how you also start after the final pop.
That's true, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Anyway.
Yep.
What's popping, everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin, and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
Every single episode.
We're late on the front on this, but we were just doing the math because this will be episode 215 of the pop.
Yes, it will.
Which means that 4 full years of doing the pop would have been at episode 208.
Yeah, technically, I think
like
so.
52 times 4.
Right, that is wild. So yeah. It, you know, adjusting for a little bit of margin of error, I'm not sure if we've like missed a week or something in there, or
there may have been like one winter break where we didn't have an episode, but I can't remember. I know for a little while there we were like, yeah, we'll take the last week of the year off and we'll upload nothing. And then we're like, we should probably still upload something.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway. You know, we're well past the margin of error. We are absolutely past the point of 4 years worth of popcorn culture.
Pretty cool.
Congratulations.
Give yourself a pat on the back if you've been with us the
a
whole
pop
time.
On the back if it were.
Oh, hey, yeah. nice. Very good.
Yeah.
So it's been an exciting 4 years in which time your son Luke has grown up to age 6. Hey, look at this.
That's
transition.
Unbelievable.
I know. And in that time, he has now joined a basketball team and had his first game over the weekend. Boom,
sure
I did it.
Wow. Well done, Wanda. Boy, it is mind blowing to think of this show starting when Luke was a 2-year-old. That's so weird.
Yeah. So when we started, Luke was Addie's age.
What? Luke. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's crazy to think. Insane. Dude, I had this, I don't know, we were watching like How I Met Your Mother last night and something about the episode was the pineapple incident.
Okay.
Great episode. And there was something about the episode that made me like think about the time period of like when at the point in the future when like all of the kids will have like left the house and like I had never really like fully... Like, I know that day will come eventually,
sure,
or whatever, but, like, I was trying to, like, think about, like, what the experience would be like, and it, like, I mean, it was, like, the worst.
Oh,
like,
no.
I was just, like, so sad so fast. I was like, oh, man, I don't want to think about it. It just made me, like, very, I don't know. So, that's not relevant to Luke's first basketball game. Maybe it is a little, but.
No, yeah, I could see it, yeah, because, I mean, you're entering into, like, people always say that, like, when you have kids, they're like, don't blink, you know? Like, it all happens so fast and everything. And it's tough to actually fathom that because, like, for so much of your life, like, as you're growing up and you're attending school and, like, you know, there's the elementary school, middle school, high school, you know, like whatever you do afterwards, college, you know, like learning your first craft or getting your first job or everything is there's a lot of like new stuff that is always kind of like coming inbound and it's like sensory overload, but you're like forging memories attached to everything. And I think a lot of that makes time feel like it's transpiring like very slowly, despite the fact that it's very active because you're taking in so much all the time, like every second kind of like counts, so to speak.
Yeah.
Because you're like possibly learning something new or experiencing something new all the while. And so like, because you emotionally have to like process each individual little like aspect of life as it goes, I do genuinely think it makes it feel slower. So like when I think about my high school years, I'm like, I was in high school for like what feels like the equivalent of three times as long as doing Super Carlin Brothers.
Right.
And yeah. That was 4 years, and we've been doing, we're coming up on year 12 of Super Carlin Brothers.
Right.
So it's literally like the exact inverse of one another. But then on the flip side of things is that, like, once you hit a certain stage of life and you like find like some measure of like stability, routine, consistency, like you kind of know like what each week will look like in and out, I do feel like things start to go by a lot faster. And so like I'm starting to understand like in a way that is impossible to communicate to anyone who just hasn't like quite, you know, like lived into it yet.
Right.
Because it's like, I know I've heard this sentiment before and I like it's over and over and over. And then finally it's like, you're starting to live it and realize it. And you're like, oh, this is what people meant.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was just like this idea that I would like come home from work and it'd be like, and no one's here. Like, I know, it was like, oh man, not knowing, obviously, like, Beth will be there, but
yeah, of course.
But like, just like the comments, like, it's so funny that like, at the same time, I could feel that like anticipate that sort of like sadness. I could also like, then like this morning, like, I woke, like, Beth's alarm went off at 5, which then woke me up, and I was at least like, you know what? At least since I'm up here at 5:30 now that I've watched a bunch of, like, TikToks in bed, you know what I'm going to do? It's, you know, I'm going to go downstairs, and I'm going to try and watch the show Echo before anyone else wakes up, because I'll just sort of be alone in the house while it's quiet. And it was like, no, are you kidding? Of course you're not going to be able to do that. Luke's awake, too.
Right.
He's coming straight downstairs. What did you think? You were going to get a moment of peace at 5:30 in the morning?
No.
Idiot.
No way.
No chance. And then it was like, I mean, by the time I left the house, I was like so frustrated because like I didn't have to take Luke to school today. He has the day off. And like, which means that I had like a little bit of extra. I didn't have like the stress of like packing lunches or getting ready and had to be like out the door quickly. Like my only responsibility was like get to the gym by 7:45. I'm up at 5:30. I'm going to be so early. It's going to be great.
Yes.
And it's like, sure enough, I'm not even close to early. Ugh. You know, I'm like 5 minutes late to the gym. And it's like, it's, you know, there's this weird phenomenon. I think that happens when, maybe this is just the act of having kids, but it's like at 5:30, like when I was walking down the stairs 1 minute before Luke did, I was like, you know what's going to be great? I'm going to go downstairs. I'm going to have coffee. I'm going to like pack my bag for the day. And like, that's all I'll really need to do before I can sit on the couch. And it was like, that like it took me a full 2 hours to make myself breakfast and put 4 articles of clothing in a bag, you know, like this is like all I am trying to do. And it was like the number of just like, daddy, like, can you come help me do this? I need food. I'm hungry. I don't want this food I just asked for. I need something else. I want this cold. I want it hot. It was just the non-stoppedness of it for, and it's like, then I'll get to the, and I'm like, how does this happen? How is it possible that like you can go this like full length of time? And it's like, all I needed to do was one thing and you were up at 5:30. How are you late?
Yes.
You know, it's like so frustrating. It's just like, all I want to do is my single simple task. I want to make my smoothie and I want to pack my bag. Because I don't have to pack your lunch today. Right. I don't have to do that. I don't have to get you dressed. You can just sit on the couch and do nothing if you want.
Right.
But of course, that's not what you want to do.
The irony is that you literally started this conversation by talking about like how sad you will be when this is also not the case.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And that is the, of course, the weird irony. It's just like, I was like so frustrated this morning, like being unable to accomplish simple things. And then at the same rate, like the idea of that being gone is also like the saddest thing in the world. So it's just, life is weird. Kids are weird. Life is hard. Life is hard.
Well said.
But anyway, Luke had his first basketball game this weekend.
Yeah, I'm dying to know how it goes. I don't know how we got through the weekend without getting a report.
I know. Well, so yeah, I know. It seems like the sort of thing I'd be like sharing up a storm about. But I'm going to tell you about it right now.
Okay, lay
it
on me. Let's see. So I know nothing.
So this is, it's through the program. Yeah, through the Gryffindor. It is through the program called like Upward Basketball, which is like a church league thing, I guess.
Yep.
And so like we get there. This is our first. This is, you know, our family of five's first experience with any sort of organized team sport at all.
Okay.
You know, like we've done some like soccer shots, which is just like a little soccer camp. You know, but you know, we have like a little basketball hoop in the basement. We've been to some practices, but we've never played on a team in a competitive environment with like a clock and a referee and everything.
Right.
So We're walking in. I had like really no idea what to expect. What's the format? There's like a guy at the door and he's like, all right, take the kids downstairs, drop them off with the team as always, parents. Then you head up to the hallway and, you know, wait your turn. And it was like, all right, okay. That's not how I remember it when I was a kid, but you know.
You wait your turn?
Well, so the way it works at this particular church is that there are two basketball courts, which then they have cut. There's one giant basketball court, which they've been cut in half.
Okay.
So that instead of playing full length, the kids are playing like on half courts, going width to width instead of full length.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
So in that way, they can have four teams out there at once.
Okay.
And they've got, I guess, a bunch of teams, and they're trying to be pretty on schedule about it.
Okay.
So while the current four teams are playing, all of the parents whose kids aren't playing are like waiting in the hallway for those two games to end. So those people can clear out and then it'll be like open up room.
It'll like cycle.
So they don't don't want the parents of people who aren't playing in there, like holding seats or something, like waiting for their game or something.
Okay, that's kind of interesting. I just would have assumed that you would have just gone and watched like the end of whatever game before Luke's, and then you would have watched Luke's, and then you would have left.
Yeah, that is what I would have assumed too. When we were kids and did like rec basketball, it was always at a place with so many bleachers that it didn't matter.
Right,
you know, you just got there, and you know, if you had to watch the end of the last game, whatever.
Yeah,
but so you walk
skill in. Skill about the comp.
Yeah, you bring them downstairs, you drop them off with the team, which actually was sort of like a blessing in disguise, I thought.
Okay.
Because like, I don't think, I wasn't expecting that. I don't think Luke was expecting it, but it was good, I think, that I didn't have to sit there and just sort of like, you know, be right next to him the whole time leading up to the game. Cause I think he was a little bit nervous, but like leaving him on his own down there gives him time to like acclimate to the situation on his own.
Right.
Without being able to then like just rely on you. Like he has to face it.
Yeah. Which I think is a remarkably like important aspect of to me, that's almost like the actual underlying exercise of exactly what you're doing. Like,
yeah.
It's not even necessarily like the athletics or scoring a goal or anything. Like there's probably like some teamwork aspects, but I feel like going and being a part of something and doing something a little bit independently from what you know as your support system is sort of like what's building a little bit of like individual like confidence.
I think that's exactly sort of the purpose here, because I mean everyone's so little, it's not like they're down there discussing tactics or something.
They barely know
where to go,
right? Luke, you're point guard, all right? So like, yeah, you're gonna be setting up the play, and you know,
there's no positions or anything like that. So that I thought was good. I went up, and then it turned out I happened to know a bunch of the other parents on some of the other teams playing, so chatted with them in the hallway, and they were all kind of in the same it was interesting to hear like the how far into this process other families were, because some people was like, yeah, this is our third kid, like it's super fun out there, we love this program, and other people like, my kid is, you know, he's touched a basketball a few times, this is our first time, you know.
Right yeah.
So that was comforting that, you know, that's just sort of like a familiar experience, that like it's easy to look at like some other kids and be like, good Lord, this kid's going to be playing in the NBA or something. But then to know that other people are out there just like, yeah, we're here.
Yeah.
I'm proud of my child for standing there, you know.
Right. We're all figuring it out.
So it's then you finally go and sit down, and they have like this is what was very cool. They have like little intros for the teams. They're like, all right, next up is the, you know, the Lions, say hello to, you know, Graham and Luke and whoever. They just say like all the kids' names as they like walk in and stuff, and I was like, that's pretty fun.
That is pretty fun.
So they do that for all four teams.
The Toon Squad.
Yeah, so
I love it.
That was pretty cool. And then they get out there and they do six periods of play.
Okay.
So it's, you do three periods, halftime, three more, and that's it. So I think they do six so that they make sure that everyone has like the most amount of playing time possible.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
Which is good. And then, there's not really positions, but the way they do it is they give, there's like five different colored wristbands, like sweatbands or whatever.
Okay.
And whatever color you have, you're supposed to guard the person with the same color on the other team.
Oh, that's
so
clever.
Yeah. So it's just sort of like, you're green, you just stick with the green guy on the other team. That's who you're playing defense on or whatever. So don't worry about that. This is the most very, very basic man-to-man coverage.
Right.
And that's all we're going to do. We can't possibly teach you guys a zone or something, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
That is pretty neat. neat, because I remember this stage of childhood basketball, yeah. And I was just like, I don't know where I'm supposed to be.
Exactly.
And you know, it's like, I always feel like I'm running the play, but I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah, so that was, I thought that was a good way to do that, because it gives you, like, if you have no idea what to do, it's just like, just follow that person around.
Yes.
You know? Yep, so. Yep. That gives you some sense of what to do. And then it was interesting to watch Luke throughout the game. So we played like three periods of play, because they just like rotate in and out with, like, there's 10 kids and like they just switch five and five and five and five and,
okay, you know, gotcha,
kind of do that.
Yeah.
So I would say for Luke's first period, there was about like a 3-foot circle, and I think he'd mostly just sort of stayed in there the whole time.
Okay.
Just sort of like looking around, just sort of like, am I allowed to go this way? Am I allowed to go that way? That was kind of interesting to watch. Just sort of like, okay, I'm out here, I'm doing it. And then sat down. The next time it was a little bit more like, okay, I sort of know to follow my person with the wristband a little bit. I'll move a little. I wouldn't say he was going for the ball or anything. Like at all, okay. Which is totally fine also. And then by the third game, or by his third period, there was like one little section at the end where the person he was guarding had the ball, and they, like, you know, they went to go shoot and they missed, and he like actually, you know, ran in there to like try and go get the rebound, and he got to dribble it like four times or something, but I think the ball had gone out of bounds, so the ref whistled the play dead or whatever.
Okay.
And then he passed the ball in, and that was the extent of him handling the ball.
Okay.
But all that to say, he left and he felt absolutely, I think he had a lot of fun, even if he looked kind of nervous and a little out of sorts while he was out there. And the next day we were talking, like last night we were talking about some other sport. I forget even what, football. I was like, oh, do you want to play football? I was like, no, I just like basketball. That's just my favorite sport. And I was like, okay, awesome.
Yeah.
That's so good to hear.
Good to know. Good.
Great.
To know.
I'm like, the fact that you're calling it like a thing you really enjoy is fantastic, because like, despite the level of participation. And then I guess after the game, because it's like a church thing, they give out a star every week to every kid, which is like for different, I don't know, to represent whatever verse was like they went over that day in practice.
Okay.
So everyone got a green star. And then they also have like little extra stars for like best offense, best defense, like best effort, and then most Christ-like.
Oh, of course. Okay.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you who got most Christ-like. One Luke Williams.
Wow.
I know. I was okay. Like, wow, Luke, impressive.
All right.
Really good. So that was our experience at Luke's first basketball game. I think he is definitely looking forward to more. Unfortunately, we're going to miss the next one, because we're going to be on a family trip next week.
Yes, we are. Yeah,
very exciting for. But he'll have one more practice, and then we'll come back. And he's very excited for the next game he gets to play, and it's against the Polar Bears, which is his best friend at school is on the Polar Bears.
Okay.
So Luke is he keeps telling me how much better Lions are than Polar Bears, and I'm like, dude, you're totally right. Like, man, they don't stand a chance.
What a good point.
I know. What a good point.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. Well, way to go, little Lukester. For whatever reason, I feel like ever since, since as he's been growing up, for some reason, it has always felt like basketball will end up being his sport.
I don't know why. You're right. There was, it's like, I felt like even before he was born, it was like, yeah, I'll probably be like point guard, you know.
I know. Doubt. Yeah, that's exactly what it's always felt like. So yeah, it'll be so curious to see what they gravitate to.
It will be, especially because like as of now, you know, like the difference in height, especially between because I think this is like a 5 to 6 year old league, basically.
Okay.
So if you just turned 5 versus someone who's like almost 7, like pretty big gap.
Yes.
In growth. Yes. Yeah. So there are some kids who are like definitely like a lot or significantly tall, not significantly taller, but like more developed basketball wise.
Right. Sure. Right. Yeah. This was something I think for me growing up. I have a couple of thoughts on it as well. Is that I'm pretty sure, and you'd have to correct me if your memory like serves differently, but I feel like growing up, me and you tended to play on the same teams, and I think that they were usually just like scooting me up so that like I could go and be on your team or whatever.
I don't remember that for basketball.
Not for basketball. No, for soccer.
For soccer, I do remember being on the same team more, and for basketball, I don't. I don't know if we ever were on the same team.
Yeah, yeah, that may have been different. Yeah.
I know that whatever basketball team, whatever, like, I don't know how they split up the teams. It seemed like I had a pretty recurring rec league basketball team of a lot of familiar faces every year.
Right.
I think it was based on Rocky Mountain. I can tell you that the people in my class were awesome.
I know.
Like, dude, I mean, and I think for the most part, there was just like a group of kids, like a year, like in the year between us.
Right.
That were like, I know, I think at least one of them went to go play for like UVA or something.
Okay.
I don't know. Or did some, maybe it was for track or something, but like, you know, for 10-year-old basketball, I mean, some of these kids were like, shooting field goals, you know, just off the point, landing through. I was like, the people on my team are like actually good for rec league in Franklin County.
Yes, you know? Yes. No, I know. There was this like weird thing growing up, and it's like to this day, I can't ever figure out if it's just like the lens of being like a younger brother and like having these people who are older and bigger than you, but then also have like this like layer of familiarity because I now know like their names and some of their personalities. And like I've watched you grow up with them and stuff. And so I can never quite figure out as I was growing up and like watching your class in front of me. Like I feel like you had this like golden class all through like elementary school where it was like they were always like the best. The teachers always loved them. And oftentimes that like benefited me in some capacity because like I would come to have the same teacher that you had and yeah. They would be like, oh, you're Jonathan's little brother. Like, right. You know, so it was like, I like had like a good word, like going into like the classroom or whatever, you know? So people were always like super, you know, like the teachers were always excited to like see like another one come through or whatever. But right. Then I grew up with what had to just be like the biggest cyclone class imaginable right. Where it was just I feel like most of my memories of people screaming at me as a child were almost from like all of my elementary school teachers, all of whom I knew you had amazing experiences with. Mm-hmm. And like what I was witnessing for each of them was their like each of their respective mental breakdowns as my class right. Just like wore them down. Yeah, it was like I was like, oh my gosh, like over and over again. So anyway, but yeah, that was always that. But the other thing that I was going to touch on a little bit that I feel like you brought up with Lukester, like the fact that he like walked away, he had fun, he really enjoyed it, is sort of like this like interesting perspective now from like the parent side of things, where it's like, what do you do if you've like enrolled your child into an activity that they now don't enjoy?
I know what to do. Yeah, I've seen this, or this is the wisdom I've heard that I really like, is that it like there's no, like when kids are like doing sports, there's no doubt they're going to have days that are like, you know, a bad day at practice or like a frustrating day or like a hard loss or whatever.
Yep.
And the wisdom I've heard is that you need like, you have to like, you can't be like forcing them to do it if they just hate it or whatever, but you can only let them choose to quit on a, like on a good day.
Okay. Okay.
Which yep. Like if they're like, you know, if they come home and they're just like frustrated because they lost and they want to quit, like that's a bad time to choose to quit.
Right.
Like if their team just like, you know, won 6-2 on a soccer game and, you know, everyone's cheering and they went to a pizza party and they're just like, I really just wish I hadn't gone. I just didn't have any fun. It's like, okay, maybe that's a little more like you really just don't like it.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Right, right, right.
Like,
yeah.
And I think I was like, that seems like a very good rule. Like, and you can even like, I think I've heard like even communicate that to him. Like, you're allowed to quit if you don't like it, but only on a good day.
Like yes. Only when things are all going your way. Yeah. This is like kind of a curiosity for me because I know growing up, one of the things that we did that I did not particularly like was swim team.
Mm-hmm.
And this was something that I feel like we did for a lot of years.
Yeah.
But eventually I was allowed to stop doing it. And like, I would almost love to go and ask mom this exact question. Like,
yeah.
Like what was finally the threshold? And the other thing I'm trying to keep in the back of my mind is like, or did I just start cross country in eighth grade and we had morning runs in the summer and therefore it was like, well, I can go do my cross country morning runs instead uh-huh. of going to swim practice. Yeah. I'm not really sure like what, like whether or not like that was the point where I was just like, okay, well you don't have to do it anymore because now you're doing a different sport.
I think I remember what I always liked after we started doing cross country. I remember like in the summers, we always had these like mile club sheets.
Yes.
That were like, you know, you were trying to get like at the end of the summer, you'd get like a mile club shirt for however many miles you ran in the summer.
Right.
And they always had these like conversion rates for like, like if you went like on a really long, like for swimming and for biking as well.
Yeah.
Where like this much swimming you could write down as this many miles of running or this much. And it, like for biking, you had to like cut it in half or like maybe even more. And for swimming, you could like multiply it.
Right.
Because it was like the distance is so much harder. So I always remember really liking that about swim team that I could come home and be like, yep, those are my running miles. Don't have to go do that now.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That was like the complete inverse for me. It was like, oh, thank goodness I don't have to go keep swimming at all anymore.
Yeah.
But I do feel like it's kind of an interesting one because it wasn't like I like struggled at the sport. I just didn't like the sport.
Well, sure.
You know? Yeah. So yeah, that was sort of it for me. But I feel like I've looked back on it so many times because I do love the water.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what was it about swimming that you didn't like? Like now I think that like I spend, you know, like 90% of my energy outside of work imagining the next time that I can go and interact with water again.
Right.
You know, like that's like, it's like one of my favorite ways to go and like pastime or like recreational activity or anything. And I like look forward to the summer specifically so that I can go and have this aspect of my life like back in play again.
Yeah.
But I feel like it was just like, I hated going to swim practice and not being able to breathe. It was like,
I mean,
that is like what I most associated was like all I always feel like I can't breathe.
Right.
Which I suppose, I mean, the very aspect of both cardio activity and your face being in the water.
Yeah.
You know, are directly correlated.
Yeah. I mean, it's a hard breathing sport for
it
sure.
It is a hard breathing sport.
I mean, there's no doubt about it that swim practice is just hard.
Yes.
And there was, I remember that also being part of it. It's just like there was never any time to catch your breath. And I remember like, I think when I started doing swim team, it was before we had moved at like Rocky Mount at the YMCA and they were like just starting doing it. And so like the person who was the coach, I don't know if they'd like coach swimming somewhere else or if they were just like reading how to coach swimming or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I remember like, it was fun to go in the pool and like learn how to do the strokes and stuff, but then it would be like these insane workouts and it would just be so hard.
Yes.
And I think for the longest time when we were doing it, especially in Rocky Mount, like we didn't have meets at all.
Right.
There was no competing.
Yeah.
You just went to practice, did this hard thing, and then left to no end. That right there might have been like the beginning of the end because there was never a chance to like reap the practice.
Right.
Like, I think there was like, you know, if you had 12 weeks of practice, I think the first meet I ever did was like an in-house meet where you just competed against the people you practiced with.
Right.
You know, and it was like that just wasn't very much. And I remember, I think if you've ever done swim team, you will know exactly about the giant yellow clock or whatever. There's the same giant clock in every competitive swim practice environment.
Okay.
And the way the clock works is that it dictates your rest and so you might have like 1 minute to go down to the other end of the pool and back. And then when you get back, you get out of the pool and you look at the clock and you get to wait until the second hand reaches the top and that's your cue to go again.
Right. Yeah.
And I just remember it feeling like so demoralizing that you could get like, it would feel like, because like the opportunity to rest was there and it would feel like you could get to the other end and look up and be like, oh, I get to rest for 15 seconds or whatever. But it's like one, even if you had 15 seconds of rest, which meant you just did like a 45, 50 or whatever.
Yeah.
Which means you were flying. I don't think that's possible. Whatever. The point is you'd look up and no matter how much time was left, even if it was even if you had 20 seconds of rest, it went by so fast.
Yes.
And it was like, you were nowhere near catching up, but that's if you had 20 seconds. And more often than not, you had like 10 to 5 and it was just like, okay, see ya.
Go again. Yep.
I also remember the enforcement of like flip turns at an extremely early age, and it's like, to be fair, flip turns are just 1,000% faster.
Yeah. So a flip turn, in case you're unaware, is basically as you swim up to the opposing wall where you go to like turn and go back in the other direction.
Yeah.
Like when you're really young, what you would do is you would just go and like tap the wall and then spin around and push back off again and keep swimming. A flip turn is basically like you're watching like the lines on the bottom of the pool, and then you know the exact moment when you go to like tuck your head in and flip underwater so that you can push off of the wall without ever stopping
without ever stopping. Yeah. Yes. So you can flip and push way faster than touch, spin, push.
Right.
And because you're already underwater, you are just like it. I mean, it is undeniably faster.
Yes.
And it is absolutely what you should do if you're trying to be a competitive swimmer. But it was also doing the flip turn was the thing that would always like because you were heading into the wall, like it required that you hold your breath for the extended period of time where you flipped, pushed, and then resurfaced.
Yes.
And while you're already sprinting down to the other end of the pool and you have only had a breath every third stroke, it tended to be really hard to hold your breath
yes.
for that extra time and come up and feel like you could continue moving. And I remember that always being the hard and just arduous part of flip turns that I hated. And like, something about it, I was always just like, nah, not for me. And it was like one of those things I look back, I'm like, why don't you just like man up and do the flip turns, man? Like, what was your problem?
And oh, so you never did it.
I never really did it. Swim. Yeah. Even like through that, I would just like touch and go.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I never do that.
The other thing is that you would do a flip turn for, you do it in freestyle and backstroke. I don't think you can do it for breaststroke and butterfly.
Okay.
Because you even if you did it, like those two required you to hit both hands on the wall.
Okay.
As part of the stroke. So, and the breaststroke was always my best thing. So that was the thing I did the most, which right. you didn't have to flip turn for.
Okay.
Or whatever.
Okay. Because I was like, at some point in time, I remember I gravitated towards that exact same one. And like, that was like what I started to excel at. But I wonder if that was like also the line where it was like, I had like aged into the equation where it was like, you should probably be flip turning by now.
Right.
Like, but like you can't. So like, yeah. I also remember, I think this was maybe the other thing that finally did me in is that if you've never seen somebody do the butterfly stroke before in like a swimming competitive environment, you know, like Michael Phelps or something.
Yeah.
They always make it look so just unbelievably natural. But I feel like the other main like swim strokes are all strokes that you might conceivably do in like any type of leisurely situation, any type of survival situation. But like if you like go down on a plane into like the river and you need to swim like to shore to save yourself, there is no circumstance at all whatsoever
yeah,
in which
you're
case
right.
you're like time to butterfly way out of this.
Right.
Where's that dolphin kick, everybody? Let's go.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it is like it almost literally feels like an invented activity just because somebody was like, this looks really, really cool. And like if you've ever seen like a picture of somebody like forward facing, like emerging out of the water with like both absolutely ripped swimmer shoulders, like
yeah.
you know, up in the air and like arms coming up. I mean, it is one of the most ferocious looking physical activities that
yeah.
anybody can do, but it is like intentionally difficult for the sole purpose of making it like a competitive thing. I mean,
right.
it would literally be like if there was like the 100-meter dash and then also the 100-meter dash where you also have to carry like a 100-pound anvil.
Yeah.
You know,
like, it'd be like if it was like the 100-meter broad jump and it was just like, who can jump who can jump 100 meters the fastest?
Yeah, right.
You know,
right,
like,
yeah.
No one would ever choose to do this. Is not
right. Nobody's running from a bear and taking yeah. two-footed jumps.
Exactly.
Like imagine a sack race without the sack.
Yeah.
You know?
That being said, I do think it is very fast if you're doing it right. But here's the other thing. In order to be doing it like correct, you need all the muscles.
Yeah,
You need all of the muscles and all of the form and the form is hard no matter what.
Yeah.
Like it's just difficult. It doesn't feel natural. Like it until it does, I guess. And like if you're doing it right, every single motion in the butterfly should be propelling you forward very fast.
Yes. Yeah. But so this was my memory attached to it was that I couldn't do it at all. Still can't do it at all.
Yeah.
And this, so like what would happen to me is I remember there being one swim meet in particular for like our local swim club.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like against like our rival swim club or something like that.
Oh.
And it was like one of these things, like swimming is also kind of a strange one because it's a very individual sport where you compete on a team basis as
yeah.
well as like an individual basis.
Yeah.
So it got to my age category and I wasn't slated to do butterfly that night at all. I had like my events were like written in Sharpie on my hand or whatever.
Right.
And they were like, I remember the coach coming over to me and they're like, Ben, this is like a nail biter. They don't have anybody doing the 50 fly in your age range. All you have to do is go and complete it, and you will score us like 7 valuable points
for
the team competition. All you have to do is swim a 50 fly, which is down one time, back one time. And I was like, Coach, I can't do it. Like it's like, it's not that I'm like afraid to do it. It's not that I'm worried to do it. It's not that I'm like embarrassed as to how long it will take me to do it. It's like, I am physically incapable of completing a 50 fly. Right. Like
I don't have the form.
I don't have the form. Like every time you ask me to do it in practice, I just do freestyle instead.
Just flop
like,
it.
I haven't been doing it.
Oh,
like,
no.
You know, so it's like one of those, and I always remember this particular swim meet because clearly like, you know, the coach is just coming over to me. It's like, this is 7 free points. All I have to do is convince him to go and jump off the board.
Right.
But I'm like,
you're going to be a hero.
I know. I'm like, but you realize there, like, this is the other problem too, is that there are judges. So it's like, on top of everything else, it's like, it doesn't even matter if I'm horrendously slow. It's that if my form breaks down badly enough, I can be disqualified.
Right.
And that will be very embarrassing.
Right.
Is that if it was only me and I'm out there and I'm just doing it for the sake of winning these points for our team, and not only like do I struggle at it and like I'm flopping the whole time, but I could still also just be disqualified and not earn us those points. I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's what happened, and it was kind of embarrassing.
Did you get DQ'd?
No, I didn't. I didn't do it at all. I was like, I can't do it. Like, oh, I don't know what to do. So I didn't get disqualified. I've never been disqualified before.
Oh,
but
that's good.
Maybe that was one of those things where, I mean, the judges were like parents, so I doubt that for the most part they were actually out there trying to like make kids feel bad.
Oh, I know, right? I think, you know, it's like, if you, I'm sure the only thing that could have gotten you disqualified from the butterfly is like not doing like the two-hand touch on the turn.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And it probably is more coming down to like in the event that somebody was just straight up doing freestyle and beat the person doing butterfly.
Sure.
It's like, okay, well, they weren't actually doing the correct strokes. So we need to disqualify them because like this other person clearly won the actual competition. Anyway, so yeah.
I'm trying to remember all the different random swimming rules there are. Now, the other thing that I think made it hard to get good at the butterfly is that you're trying to teach like, you know, 50 middle schoolers or high schoolers how to do it. And like the nature of the size of the pool is that you got like all these people in this sort of rank. You've got like, you know, 10 people in your lane all doing the workout together.
Yeah.
And the lane is only so big. And it, the way the butterfly works is you want your arms at maximum. Oh, no, I just hit the duck. You want your arms at maximum extension to either side. And it's like, even in high school, I could touch both lane lines with my arms extended. You know, like there, if people are coming back at me, there's almost no way not to hit them.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Like, especially at like the local, so like maybe like actual swim clubs have the lanes wide enough where you're not going to do this.
Right.
But like, that wasn't the case where we were going.
No.
And it made it so hard to do the butterfly because there was such the risk of like locking elbows with someone going back the other way.
Yes. This is my last, then we can finally move on to the swim team.
We'll stop reminiscing about
like,
swim team.
I'm like reliving like too many negative memories right now. I'm thinking back on it. I'm like, it's not just in my head. I genuinely did not like this sport. But the other aspect of practice that was so frustrating was that like they would put you in lanes with people who were like similarly competent to your like swim ability, or at least in the opinion of the coach. But part of what would also happen, and I think part of like where I really started to get frustrated with it, was that like if somebody like starts like tap your foot behind you because they're swimming right behind you, what you're supposed to do is like etiquette your way out of the like out of their way so that they can go by and then you continue on. So what I feel like eventually started happening for me was that it was like, oh, hang on, let me get out of your way. Oh, yeah, let me get out of your way.
Right.
Hang on one second, let me get out of your way. And it's like, by the time everything was said and done, I was like, well, it's like, Ben, why is it taking you so long to get down and back? It's like, because I had to stop 14 times because Melissa lapped me.
Right.
Oh, man.
She was fast.
She was fast, to her credit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, so that's the end of that.
Popcorn Culture is supported by Arena Club. Okay, so you guys know that I love trading card games and that me and Ben are big time collectors of Pokemon cards. You know, it's that childhood fantasy of finally being able to use adult money to buy those highly coveted rares of our youth. And like, even in our office, we have not one, but two full display cases with some of our all time favorite rares. Daenerys cards that we've pulled, but something I did not know existed when I was a kid in my youth was the grading process for trading cards or sports cards or whatever you're collecting. You know, to me, it was just like a rare Charizard is a rare Charizard. Like, it doesn't matter if it's been hanging out in my pocket with my lucky paperclip. Turns out it does matter, and kind of a lot, because if you get your cards professionally graded, it can add huge value. And then not only that, but once they're graded, they will like seal them in that pristine condition inside of a plastic case, or what's known in the industry as a slab. And that's where Arena Club steps in, because it's like buying a booster pack, but it's for a pre-graded card. Now, I know that can take like maybe a second to wrap your head around, because you're opening physical cards on a digital platform, which means you open the pack online and see your pulls where they can be added to your showroom for the world to see, but you can also request them to be sent to you at any time. So they have got a ton of pre-graded cards, and then you will get to randomly open one, and then they'll keep it for you, or they can send it to you, or you can just like sell it or trade it online or whatever you want to do. But whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform you have got to check out. And right now you can get 10% off your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/poppop, which, wow, that is a crazy offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack. That's like $40 right there. Anyway, that's arenaclub.com/poppop for 10% off your first purchase.
Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. Y'all are likely aware of the fact that we have our very own Shopify store, Carlin Brothers Mercantile, and it's hard to imagine not having it now, but arriving at the decision to open our own web store was a big one. In fact, we started our journey on the interweb back in 2012 and didn't finally open up shop until 2018. And a huge part of that is just not knowing where to start, but that's where Shopify steps in. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, which is a fancy way of saying it's a really easy and effective way to start an online business, no matter if you're operating out of your garage or have like a whole building or three or something. Once we were set up, our biggest concern was trying a new product, only to discover no one was interested in it. But Shopify is powered with so many reports, more than you can even imagine. And this is so handy because it allows us to use data to better provide what folks are actually interested in. It's so easy to use, but even if you do find yourself caught in a jam, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/poppop. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/poppop now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/poppop.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Swim team, at least we put it behind us.
There you go. But here's the real question is, would you do it now?
No.
No, you still wouldn't know. No, know, interest.
The number
but
one
that
thing.
Is surprising to you, because like I feel like once a month you're like, we should do triathlons.
I know. Well, and that's literally what I was going to say next. The number one thing that makes me want to do it is triathlons. But I would not do swim team for anything.
Okay.
No way, no how. I would never do it again.
Okay, because I remember like part of like the way our like high school swim team was, it was like you had like your public pool that you went to and like they had a swim team.
Yes. Yeah.
So it wasn't like we were like part of some like year-round swim club program or something.
No. Our younger brother was though.
Yeah. This was just like summer swimming basically, but the age range was from like 5-year-olds all the way up to like adults.
Yes.
So like our mom would be at practice 4 lanes over just with the adults doing swim team. And like to me, that sounds very appealing now. Like it just feels so low stakes. Like
interesting.
It's just like, yeah, my kid's got to be here for practice anyway. And like this would be great. Like, I don't feel like I would feel the pressure to be like performing at all, you know?
Maybe that's
like,
fair.
You would just be like, yeah, okay, someone came up with a workout for me to do and this is great. Like that would sound great to me now.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's
that's
like, because like, well, did my exercise for the day.
I the other thing that I would say to bring it all full circle as well is that I think that like a lot of times it's like so many other situations where like, if you go and seek something out because you have decided that you want to do it, then I do think it like unlocks a whole new perspective and scope as to like what you're bringing to like you're there because you chose to be there versus you're there because like this is what we do on the summer so that we don't sleep in every single morning.
Right.
You know, like which was frequently how I saw it. It was like, you mean to tell me it's summer break and I just now have to get up at 8
every morning? I still got to get up at 8 and you're jumping the freezing cold pool and miss the first hour of the Tour de France, mom. Jeez.
Exactly. No, but so I think like I had a very similar relationship with like skiing and snowboarding growing up, which was that like it was the type of thing where I would be kind of like filled with angst, filled with anxiety, like over like, okay, I know we're going this weekend, which largely means I'm going to spend a lot of time on a cold mountain by myself, falling down and just being like covered in bruises.
Right.
You know, because I've just like, I've done nothing but like I'm not good at it. And so I do remember that there was like this big sense of responsibility as I got towards like college. Cause I was like, okay, at some point in time, I'm going to have to be able to show my kids how to do this activity. And so I should probably go out there and learn for myself how to do it. And so like, we didn't ski a lot growing up. I feel like we went like maybe every other winter for like maybe one weekend. Uh-huh. Like, so it wasn't like we got like tons of reps in or anything like that. So that was also part of the problem, is you never got to get good at it. Cause you're
right.
Yeah,
going. You didn't have like a lengthy amount of time to, yeah. By the time you felt like comfortable, it was like, well, it's time to go.
Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, but when I was in college, I remember I was like, okay, I'm going to save my money. And I went and bought a snowboard and then I bought binders. Then I, you know, got a jacket for Christmas and like finally put all the pieces of the puzzle together, started going on my own. And it was like a whole new world. It was like, oh my gosh, I love doing this activity all of a sudden.
It is so weird how stuff like that works out. Like, I always liked going skiing as a kid, so that wasn't a problem for me.
Yeah.
But like, it always felt like there was this weird barrier where like, you know, you did always have to go like with mom or dad, or like, you know, you didn't have any control over it. And like, it didn't take like a ton of like, I don't know, pride in it or something. But I remember like, yeah, one winter break, our friend John, like him and his siblings had like organized this like 20 person house up at Snowshoe.
Yeah.
And it was like, they were sort of like the connective tissue between the group. So it was like all of Curtis's friends and Jane's friends and John's friends.
Okay.
And there was just this giant house. And I mean, it was a super duper fun trip. And we were there for like 5 days or something. And it was the first time it was like, I am going skiing because I want to go skiing.
Yes.
And it was like, all of a sudden it was like the difference it makes is like tremendous in like your confidence level or something. So it's like, I feel like that's the sort of thing where it's like, oftentimes you're right, like if mom and dad always made you go, like I can see where it would be like, oh, I don't really know if I want to. But then like, conversely, if you got invited to go with just some friends without anyone there and you're just like, oh, well, now I'm just here.
Yeah,
like, it seems like, well, actually I do know what I'm doing.
Right.
Like all of a sudden, like I'm not doing it with any amount of like responsibility or pressure. I'm just doing it because I want to. And that makes like a big difference.
Yes.
And like,
yes.
And like the way it works. And like, there's so many, I think sometimes there's this like weird magic too, where I think when you're like trying to learn something, you're putting so much effort into it that you like get into your own way. And then like, you stop doing it. But if you come back like 6 months later, having not touched it at all, you're like 10 times better than you were somehow.
Right. Because yeah, like, it's like, what just got unlocked here?
Yeah. Like yeah. I remember, this is going to be a really weird example. I always remember this about pogo sticks.
Oh, okay. Yes. I remember we had a pogo stick growing up.
We had a pogo stick growing up. And I remember like we got it and it's like, you see, like, especially when we were growing up, pogo sticks highly featured on like cartoons and stuff.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They were all the rage.
In vogue toy kind of thing.
Yeah.
And having one, you're like, this is gonna be great, they always make it look so fun, and then you get on and of course it's like impossible.
It's way harder than you thought.
It's way harder
it was
than you think. And I remember just like going out there and like we would all try, and if you got like 3 or 4 hops, it was like, whoa, that was great.
Yes.
You know, and not that you went high or not that you had any control or anything. And I remember thinking like, we did that for like, you know, 4 or 5 days or like a week or something, and I was like, all right, well, this toy is just kind of hard. And then I remember going out there just sort of like months later, just sort of like rediscovering the toy in the garage and being like, you know what? We were getting pretty good at it. I thought, let me just go take it out there and just like stepping on it and being like, I can just hop like 50 times in a row now.
How
like,
about that?
No problem at all. I don't even need hands. I can do it without hands.
Yes.
It was like all of a sudden, even though you could barely do it at all, like clearly you had built the muscle memory in a way that like your brain sort of like understood the mechanics. You just needed to get your mind out of the way. And now that you're trying it again without all this pressure on you, you can just sort of do it.
Yeah. It's
like,
yeah.
What? How much are you in your way sometimes? I feel like that happened a bunch. That's always the example I remember. But yeah, I don't know. Do you have any recollections to that effect?
No, I mean, it's like, I feel like in some capacity, I feel like I probably do. I feel like it's almost like entering what they call like a flow state.
Yeah.
Which is almost the zone. Yeah, exactly. Like, it's like you have like quite literally entered a space where you have like let go of all of like that noise in the back of your mind. And now you're just sort of like doing the thing. And it like turns out that like if you take everything else out of the equation, it's like, oh, okay. Like I can do this and this does work. And I'm not like, you know, like, I mean, probably on some level, it makes me wonder, like if I were to go hop into a pool today and I didn't have that person, like keep tapping my foot behind me or something.
Right.
Or if nobody was putting pressure on me to like learn how to do butterfly. It's like, would I get out there and just be like, dang, this is like super relaxing. Like now right. I it's like all of a sudden, like I'm not in a hurry. I'm not trying to do anything.
Exactly.
I'm just going and like going.
I came
like,
here to have a casual swim workout.
Right. Yes. I'm just gliding through the motions and turns out it's actually quite enjoyable in this capacity. And I know that I had like a little bit of that, like, well, interestingly, like not snow skiing, but water skiing, where I remember this was like one of those things where we used to go in Vermont and like it was the exact same situation where it was like once a year, we basically had the occasion to be in the place where there was the boat and the rope and the skis.
Right.
And like, I even remember bringing the exact boat that we learned, which is my boat now.
Yeah.
The boat that we learned how to water ski behind. Like, I remember the very first time I ever put it into Virginia waters. And I was like, this is like, in my mind, it wasn't even capable of being in Virginia water.
Right.
You know, like there was something about the Vermont water that like allowed it to exist
right,
there.
Right. Like water skiing only happens on that lake. It smells a very specific way.
Yes. Yes. Like burning motor oil.
Exactly.
Like, you know the scent. But so a big part of like learning how to water ski growing up was that like, you know, again, you had very limited access. And then we were in Vermont. We had like a lot of other like family related things going on. And we would also go fishing a lot.
Yeah.
So it's like the amount of time that we dedicated each week to specifically like throwing on the life jackets, hopping in the freezing cold water and
in the seaweed.
In the seaweed. Yeah. So yeah, you're in really cold water. You got seaweed all wrapped up around your legs, which as a kid, you're just absolutely certain it's going to like just wrap around you or something. Like,
right. It's the grossest feeling.
It's very like anxiety inducing. Yeah. And then yeah, like,
especially like you're nervous about everything else. You're like having a hard time controlling the skis, which want to float up in a way that is the exact opposite of how you want them sitting in the water.
Yes.
Like it's freezing. You're nervous because you haven't done it in 365 days. And in the meantime, also these gross leaves are touching you.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. It's like, just please take that part out of it. That has nothing to even do with it.
Right. 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 Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just like there's so much going on inside of your head and like making this like a very like overwhelming experience. And then not to mention like once we started to be able to successfully and consistently get up, you then consistently also wiped out in just truly spectacular fashion.
Yeah, you did.
Like you're going like 30 miles an hour outside of the wake and you just face plant into water. It's like it hurts a lot. You know, and like a lot of times then like the skis go flying every which way and
yard,
you know,
sale.
Yep. You gotta go like swim and squish them back together, and then dad pulls around in the boat and he's like, you want to go again?
And you're like, yeah.
Yeah, I'll give him one more go. Yeah. So I'll swim in the water.
Yeah.
Kind of getting used to it.
Right.
But I do remember that then I think when I was in high school, I probably wasn't even 16 yet. I remember I was dating a girl who invited me down to her lake house, and she was like, she had seen on MySpace that I had posted pictures water skiing.
Yeah.
And this was like one of those things where it was like, it was a little bit of a stretch. Like I posted the picture to MySpace because it was a picture of me up on one ski and I was successfully doing it. What it didn't show you is that I'd only been up for about 4.5 seconds.
Oh, he needs that 4 seconds to get that picture,
to
man.
To get the photo. I know.
That's right.
And at this point in my life, I was so proud of just the fact that that photo existed. Mm-hmm. It's like, there is proof that I have stood up on one water ski at one time. And And there it is. And so this girl sees this and she is like, yeah, you should come to our lake house. Like, we'll go water skiing. And I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, I can't. I was like, again, in my head, I'm like, water skiing only exists in Vermont. Like, nobody was ever supposed to be able to call me on this.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
You know, like, I was so safe. Turns out not safe. But so I get down there and I think you actually came with me.
I did. Yeah. I do remember also skiing behind this boat.
Yeah. But the thing was, is that it was a it was warmer water.
Yeah.
A much nicer boat.
Yeah.
And it was able to pull two people at once. So you were like back there, like with somebody else, which I think like was like oddly comforting to me. Like it felt like less spooky or something. Mm-hmm. And so I do remember like this was like one of those like situations where it was like, okay, historically I've never actually been good at this before, but now I'm in the water and the life jacket is on. Like, we're about to go. Like,
right.
I'm about to tell him to send it, you know?
Yeah, like we'll send.
But of course, in my head right now, like all this whole like past, you know, like 7-8 years of my life is like all playing out at once, where it's like, oh my gosh, like it's about to go down.
Right. Like, now all of a sudden, like, unexpectedly, you're in the water next to this other like cute girl who's clearly going to be good at it because she comes out here every weekend.
Yeah, she's getting up on one ski.
Right, like, she's getting up on one ski. That's her dad in the boat. Don't want to let him down. You know?
Yeah, he's got like sailing trophies and stuff like that. It's just like
the last thing you want to do is be like, sorry guys, can we reset like 5 times?
Yes. Hold on, let me try like for like the 48th time here.
Yeah,
we'll see how this goes. But so, you know, they fire it up, they go, and I pop right out of the water.
Right.
And it was just sort of like, I think, again, it was like one of those moments where it's like, I got far enough away from all of the circumstances that like made me worried. Now, as I'm giving these stories, I'm like, I should go swim. Maybe I should go join a swim
yeah.
club. I'm due.
Yeah. I feel like there's all these situations, like we had all these things growing up and we're like hearing these stories and you're like, they're so often. It's like, yeah, we only get to do like one time a year. And I'm like, I feel like somehow, some way, like I must have managed to get like extra experience in on like all these activities, like through unusual circumstances.
Like through, cause I mean, I know you did like a lot of like Boy Scout related outings.
Yeah, for like snow skiing. Well, yeah, actually Boy Scouts is the answer to all of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. For like through like, so our family might go skiing once a year, but then the Boy Scout troop I was in, which, God, what a blessing this troop was.
They were so active.
We'd go on like 2 skiing trips a year or something.
Yeah.
And you know, it'd be there for like 3 to 4 days and you'd be, you know, with all your friends and you'd get to go off by yourself. And that'd be great. Maybe one of the best camps I ever went to was just at Clater Lake. Cause this was, we'd always gone to Camp Powhatan and that would always be like all the troop leaders are there with you the whole time. So you sort of, they're sort of like your supervisors. But then like, I remember like my particular age group, like, I guess just crossed some sort of age group threshold where it was like, all right, you guys are old enough to go to Clater Lake now. And I remember there was one trip in particular where it was me, Alex, Chris, and Dagan. And we were like the 4 people from our troop there.
Nice.
And it was like, there were no troop leaders. It's just like the 4 of you were just there just to get, and you have to set your own schedule and go do the thing. Not set your own schedule. Like, you had a camp schedule or whatever.
Sure.
But there's there wasn't like a camp counselor who slept in like your tent area. It's just like, the 4 of you are in the same troop, so you're in these 2 tents, and at night you can go hang out by your, you know, picnic. You can do whatever you want together. And it was just like, you had such freedom as like a group.
Yes.
And it was like, that was so fun. And like, part of that, and then one of the, you know, every class you do is basically getting you a merit badge or whatever. And one of them was water skiing. So it was like, for like a full week, you just got to go water skiing every day. And it's like, just your troop out there. And you know, it's just the 4 of you.
Right.
So you can just do it as much as you want, basically.
Well, that's amazing.
But so the thing was, part of getting the water skiing merit badge was that you had to be up on one ski.
Okay.
But so the way they teach you how to do it is that, I guess, because a lot of people have like never water skied before, so just getting up at all. So they have all these different levels of like getting the kids up or whatever. And the super duper duper simple way, because they want everyone to leave with all the merit badges,
of course,
is there's literally like a bar that extends next to the boat, like next to where the driver's sitting.
Oh, that's cool.
And you can just hold on to the bar next to the boat and just basically be standing there and like on the skis, starting from a standing position, and they'll just go. And it's like super easy because you're very stable.
Right.
You know, there's no rope, you're not in the wake, you know, you can just go straight. And
This is making me, the main thing it's making me wonder as you're talking right now is how unaware you are of all of your siblings' individual experiences as they're out there living their own lives.
Yeah.
Because it's odd to me, like, how much of this, like, I remember going and picking you up from this camp.
Yeah.
And not knowing any of this happened.
Right.
You know, like.
Right. Yeah. Like, Jay was just gone for a week.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I never did the bar thing because I had the Vermont experience, so I could just go straight behind the boat.
Nice.
But the thing they otherwise teach, the way they taught you to do the single ski was, I guess it was like not worth their effort to try and get you up on one ski.
Okay.
Because like maybe they've been doing it long enough that it was like the kids aren't getting up on one ski. You know,
right,
it's
right.
just, you know, we're going to get up. But so the way they would do
it's challenging.
It is. Yeah. It's challenging. And you know, you do have limited time and everyone's got to get out there.
Yeah.
So, but what they do is you get up on two skis and then they have you just drop a ski mid ski.
Right. Yep.
Which is like, you know, when I say it out loud, I'm like, what? It's like, it's gotta be the harder way to get into one ski. Like, it's easier to get up, which is probably what they're really going for. At least get you up on two skis. But then what you do is like one ski will have like an extra like little loop in the back for your back foot.
Yep.
So you drop the other ski and then you, whilst being pulled behind the boat with one foot in one ski and one foot just dangling out there, trying to inch it behind your other foot and into the little toe hold on the other ski.
You made this little finger motion of like your toes like crawling its way
That's
up.
That's exactly
there.
What it's like.
Yeah.
And you can't put too much weight on it, because if you just like step down on the back of the ski, it's gonna shove it in the water, and that's gonna be that. Like, you gotta be very delicate about it. But like, over the course of the week, I totally learned how to do it, and like to this day, that is how I get on one ski.
Yo, same.
Like, I'm, you know, it's the same thing. It's like I water ski now. Like, I think the last time was like last year when we were at the lake with, you know, your boat.
Yes.
And this is how I did it. I got up on two and I dropped one and got into the one ski. But like before that, I don't think I'd skied for like 5 years.
Right.
So it's like, but like weirdly, this skill exists in my body.
Right.
And I'm like, to me, it's like at this point in my life, like when I was a kid, I was like, it's always a little embarrassing that I have to get up on two and then drop one. But at this point in my life, I'm like, it's a freaking party trick, man.
It's like it's like I'm out there.
I'm out there. Watch this. You think I'm on two skis? Whoops.
Right. Yep.
Because like at this point, if you're out there with people, either they're amazing at it or they're just learning how.
Yeah.
Right. Like, either they're going to be shredding so hard it's embarrassing for you to get in the water, or they're just going to kind of be out there. So this is like my one trick that I've got. Like, I can get I can drop a ski mid ski.
No big deal.
Look at this. I was on two. Now I'm on one. This is my move.
It honestly is making me wish that there were just like actual adult merit badges where it's just sort of like, it's like, hey, you just like, it even feels like a really fun, like concept for a book. Like, okay, so I just recently in the past couple of months listened to the Anthropocene Reviewed podcast by John Green, where he basically like rates things on like a 5-star scale. And it could be just anything, you know, like whatever. Honestly, really great listen, would recommend. But it would be really interesting to like either write a book or do a podcast just based on like tasks that as an adult I would love to be able to like put like a big check mark next to him. I can do this thing. Like,
I can do this thing.
Yeah.
I built a fence around my garden. What?
Yes, indeed. This is like where is the badge that I can now put on my thing?
Yeah.
This would even be really funny if people ended up getting really into it and like we would go to like parties with like a sash that have like all of like your adult merit badges.
Oh my gosh.
Because it would be such a conversation piece with everybody. Like, wait, what's that one?
What's that one?
You can solve a Rubik's Cube? That's amazing. Which is the one I always come back to. It's like the iconic.
That's
like,
the one.
It's like, I can't check that box yet, but one day.
What are just like random skills you could learn?
Skills you could learn. So like that is like the question.
Sabering a champagne bottle.
Oh, that's a great one. That's a great one. Yeah.
Guess what? You already can. It's so much easier than you think.
It is remarkably easy.
And so satisfying.
It is indeed. Yep. It is really cool. I feel like we went through like a little phase there where we discovered how easy it was. And I feel like we went through like, I mean, not, it definitely wasn't too many, but we probably went through like 7 champagne bottles in very quick succession because we just kept wanting to like do it again.
Right. You just wanted to do the...
Yeah, it's like I don't even really want to drink the champagne or the potential glass shards that are inside. I just want to be able to go and like saber off the top of it.
Right. Yeah.
It's so neat.
It is fun. Very good party trick.
But yeah, I would absolutely put that one on there. Let's see here. Being able to remove a bottle cap similarly in a very like similar vein without using like a bottle opener.
Oh man, like with your ring?
You can do it with your ring, can't you?
I can do it with my ring, but it hurts in a way that I feel like when people do it really when I watch other people do it, it doesn't look like it's hurting them.
Yeah.
And I'm always like, I'm about to break my finger. Check it out.
No big deal.
I don't make that sound. That just happens internally. I'm just, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like my ring is just big enough that I think when I put a lot of pressure on it on one side, like in order to like pop the cap, like the side of the ring on top of my finger that's being pushed down, like it's just big enough that there's enough leverage that it really hurts. I can do it. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Well, so this, I mean, I think that this would be really interesting because I feel like I've done a small handful of these as well, like in the world of like cooking or baking, mm-hmm. where I think once upon a time I found like the macarons were the challenging baked mm-hmm. dish to make.
Yep.
And so it kind of became this like focus of mine for such a period of time to like right. try to like have just the perfect like little rise, and then the individual cookies each need to have like the perfect foot.
Yeah.
Yes. Which has been like, it's been so interesting because I've also been working on my sourdough,
of course,
as we've been talking about the past couple of weeks. And so like over the weekend I was baking and I finally had what I would consider like my first like successful sourdough bake, like where the end product is at least very like photo worthy. Like,
yeah,
it's very pretty looking,
right?
Looks really glorious and stuff. But so after I baked that one, I immediately went online and started like watching all these videos to be like, all right, now I need to like, now that I've like crossed the threshold, I feel like I can say I have actually baked sourdough bread at this point in time. Like, you know, with my own starter and doing like all the stuff and everything. And as I'm going through, I'm like watching all these videos. Everybody has like different little tips and tricks, none of which are the same, which I found to be absolutely just like mind blowing.
Right.
That like for such a common everyday loaf, like everybody does it a little bit differently. But similar to the macarons, there is a term called the ear that people are attempting to accomplish.
That's okay.
That's like the iconic characteristic of like a sourdough loaf, which is where you've like scored the bread through the middle and you want it to like crack open and kind of give like that like ripped center texture.
Yeah.
But then one side of the ear should be folded almost like perfectly straight up.
Okay.
And so like that's like the new, that's like the new
the
marker.
Ear. The ear.
So that's like when in my mind, just to bring it full circle, you would be able to get your sourdough start like merit badge.
Oh, you got the ear.
Is when you've successfully accomplished mm-hmm. an ear
right.
on your bread.
Okay.
Which I would say so far I haven't, but I now know that it exists, which gives me something to work towards. Yes.
Man. Okay. So my own baking escapades this past week. Weekend. Not very impressive, dare I say, but kids wanted pancakes one morning, and for Christmas for Beth, I got her these like they just look like I guess they're like empty. It's like if you bought an empty sauce bottle, you know, like an empty ketchup bottle that you could just put whatever you wanted in.
Oh yes, I know exactly where you're going with this. This is amazing. I was so impressed with you.
Yeah. So I got these because my kids. Oh, I got them for Beth secretly for the kids, but it was like more like a stocking stuffer gift. But they always want, whenever we make pancakes, they want to make like Mickey Mouse pancakes. But the problem is when they take like the little scooper out of the bowl and try and put it on there, like they just plop so much batter down,
right.
And it never. It's more just like a big glob, and it's like I was like, you know what, I think I can fix this. I think so. What I got was just like a little squeeze bottle, kind of like a mustard bottle or something.
Yep.
And I just put all the batter in there, and then you can just squeeze it out.
Oh,
and
amazing.
Yeah, so you can make like perfect circles with it, and they can do it in a much easier way where they just squeeze it and the appropriate amount comes out, and you're like, okay, stop there, and then put a circle here, put a circle there, boom, perfect Mickey Mouse pancakes.
Okay.
Fantastic. But the other thing is that if you want to get like a little bit fancier with it, you can like, you know have like a fine point pen of pancake batter.
Yes.
Which is like such a game changer. So what I was doing was making name tag pancakes over the weekend.
Yes.
Yeah. It was super fun. Basically all you do is with your squirt bottle, you just write, it's like when you write on a window, like with the frost, like you have to write everything like mirrored.
Oh, okay. That's good to know. That's good to know.
Cause you're going to flip it over and then it's going to spell it correctly.
Yep.
But so you have to write it back. And then like, fortunately all of my kids and my wife, have four letter names, which make it so the pancake's not like really massive.
Yes.
But you just draw each letter out however you want. And then I was putting like a little square around it, so it had like a little frame. And then you just sort of let that cook for like a minute, 2 minutes until those will be like
crispified.
Yeah. And then you go back over the top and just fill in all the empty space with another layer of batter.
Okay.
But so, and then you have to wait for that to cook too. But whilst that's cooking, the letters will continue to cook as well.
Of course.
And so they will have a darker shade of brown than the second layer of batter. And then when you flip it, boom, there it is. There's their name right there.
I love it.
So that was having a blast with that. And it was, I think the kids were like, oh, that's my name.
You know? I know. Yeah. That is really, really cool. And I mean, it's remarkable as well. Cause I remember one of the things like back when I was on TikTok that I loved to watch was whenever like the people would do like the pancake
art.
Yeah. So they've got like all, I mean, similar to what you're doing here, they've got like all the like really specific like squirt bottles and stuff like that.
I feel people like add like food dye to them and stuff. Yeah.
Yes. Make like super intricate designs, which, and whenever I watched those back in the day, I was always so curious as to whether or not it was like, Would it be an edible pancake? Like, would it still be like an enjoy? Like, I feel like yours absolutely would be.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, that's definitely still like, you're mostly just making pancakes, but like with a little bit more intention than just a circle.
Right. Yeah.
But like when I would watch people make these like hyper realistic, like drawings and stuff like that, it would always remind me of like fondant on like a cake, which is like fondant is like a sheet of sugar, you know, that you drape over the cake itself that gives it like that absolutely perfect smooth exterior. But for the most part, you don't want to like eat it.
Yeah,
fondant.
It's not very like tasty.
Yeah, so like typically there'd be like icing underneath the fondant, and then like when you actually go to like cut into it, you would just sort of like eat up to like, you know, at this point in time, what is more of like a edible rind of the cake than anything else. And that actually always has bothered me, because I'm like, well, because it's like people would go on these like baking shows and they're like, the whole thing is edible, and it's like, but you wouldn't want to eat most of it,
right?
You know, I'm like, I want the whole thing to be edible, and I want it to like be tasty as well.
Yeah,
you know, that feels like that's the real challenge.
Yes, absolutely.
But so the pancakes were good.
I
saw the pictures; they looked amazing.
They were a hit. Yes.
Yeah.
Go name tag pancakes.
We'll have to link them somewhere so people can see them. Are they on your Instagram?
They are not on my Instagram.
Okay,
but maybe they should be.
Maybe they should be. Indeed. Yeah, that's a good one. Well done on that front.
Thank you.
Well, guys, if there's anything that you have ever experienced in your life where it was something that as a child maybe you were like exposed to, or it was something that like kind of gave you a sense of like nerves or worry or something that you like then fell in love with later in life, be sure to let us know, because I think it's kind of like an interesting, like you almost certainly know if you've ridden this particular arc before.
Right.
Because I think with so many behaviors in life, it's so easy to like have tried something for the first time. Like for example, I don't particularly like olives.
Yeah.
And this is like one of those things where it's like, I've eaten olives and I've eaten olives and I've eaten olives. And it's like almost no matter what, I just continue to not really like olives.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that can so easily happen with activities where it's like, maybe you experienced it at some point in your life, like with the wrong community around you, like the wrong context, the wrong circumstances, or maybe you were just like having like an off day when you were introduced to something, so like you don't associate it positively.
Right.
So the question is like, have you ever circled back and then discovered like, man, okay, when I first tried it, not so great, but now I love it.
Right. You know? Right. I can totally. Yeah, absolutely. I would love to hear what other people have to say on this particular front.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
It's so, like so often it's like, yeah, your parents are just sort of making you do something, but then later on in life, your friends are like, oh, you guys want to go do this thing? And you're like, yeah, I guess so. And you get there and they've never done it before and you're suddenly awesome.
Yes. It's like, wait a second. Am I good at this? Yeah. No, I know. And I think to like kind of bring the underlying like why of this whole conversation, because I feel like we had so many good examples to like talk about. But I think for me, and not that I ever felt like our parents were like forcing us through like a lot of these activities or anything, it was mostly just like these weird mental barriers that I frequently had against them that like once I was able to like unlock those barriers, like changed the whole like way that I like viewed the activity.
Yeah.
And so I think for me, it's like, especially like raising Addie, it's like, I know there are so many things that I am dying to do with her, but I also like, I do have this like underlying worry about like being like, hey, Addie, do you want to go like skiing with me every single weekend?
Right.
You know,
right.
Just like, Dad, no, I really don't want to.
Right. Like, is like, that going to be the thing where she's just like, my dad would bring me skiing every weekend. I just remember it being freezing cold every time and had these rental skis and the boots were uncomfortable.
Yeah,
and,
my toes hurt.
Right.
And there was the hot chocolate was somehow too hot despite how cold I was.
Right. And then she's gonna get to like, you know, college and her friends are gonna be like, you guys wanna go skiing? And they'll be like, I've never really been. And you'll be like, I'm actually really good at skiing.
Right, yeah.
Turns out I'm way better than all of you guys.
Now thanks, I really Dad. Love it. Yeah. Thanks, Dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, love that.
Yeah.
So maybe that's just what happens. Maybe you just have to be like, well, you know what? You'll thank me later.
Not right now.
Yeah.
That is such a tricky thing of parenting. It's just like, you'll thank me later.
I know.
Make them do it, even though in the moment they're clearly frustrated.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Like,
I know.
But like how, like so much, I feel like this is one of those things where it's like, it's so hard with like, if they're not enjoying it, chances are you're not having a good time either.
Right. Yes.
You know, oh gosh, you're crying. I'm not having fun. What are we even doing out here? And it's like, no, we're going to work through this.
Yes. Time to persevere.
Yeah,
we'll see how it goes. Anyway, if you have any feedback for us or stories you'd like to share, you can send them over to popcornculturepod@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. I do love to hear all the feedback from all the little kernels out there. Also, if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by heading on over to patreon.com/popcornculture. We got a bunch of really cool different, what is the right term for it? Things that you can receive or extra content to be heard.
Yeah, we have the after the final pop, which is sort of the show after the show.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Which is, it's like basically after each week's episode of recording, Jay and I will go into our show notes or not, look for something else that we haven't talked about already, and basically give an extra 15 to 20 minutes of conversation on that front. So if you're caught up on the pop and you're like, man, I would really love, you know, more, then if you sign up even just for 1 month, you get access to the entire back catalog for that month. So you know, just a whole new slew of content you can dive into. Again, patreon.com/popcornculture. But otherwise, until next time,
pop pop.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.